To varanaravindam yad vispuran makara kundala valgitena vidyoti tamala kapola mudaranasam Bhagavato varanaravindam yad vispuran makara kundala valgitena vidyoti tamala kapola mudaranasam vritya for the devotees anukampita dhiya out of compassion Iha, in this world, Grihita Murtehe, who presents different forms. Sanchintayet, one should meditate on. Bhagavata, of the personality of Godhead. Varana, countenance. Aravindam, lotus-like. Yat, which vispuran glittering makara alligator shaped kundala of his earrings valgitena by the oscillation vidyotita illuminated amala crystal clear kapolam his cheeks Udara, prominent. Nasam, his nose. The yogi should then meditate on the lotus-like countenance of the Lord, who presents his different forms in this world out of compassion for the anxious devotees. His nose is prominent, and his crystal-clear cheeks are illuminated by the oscillation of the glittering alligator of his glittering alligator shaped earrings. Purport. The Lord descends to this material world out of his deep compassion for his devotees. There are two reasons for the Lord's appearance or incarnation in the material world. Whenever there's a discrepancy in the discharge of religious principles, and there is prominence of irreligion, the Lord descends for the protection of the devotees and the destruction of the non-devotees. When he appears, his main purpose is to give solace to his devotees. He does not have to come himself to destroy the demons, for he has many agents. Even the external energy, Maya, has sufficient strength to kill them. But when he comes to show compassion to his devotees, he kills the non-devotees as a matter of course. The Lord appears in the particular form loved by a particular type of devotee. There are millions of forms of the Lord, but they are one absolute. As stated in the Brahma Sangita, Advaitam Achutam Anadim Anantarupam. All the different forms of the Lord are one, but some devotees want to see him in the form of Radha and Krishna. Others prefer him as Sita and Ramchandra. Others would see him as Lakshmi Narayan. And others want to see him as four-handed Narayan, Vasudev. The Lord has innumerable forms, and he appears in a particular form as preferred by a particular type of devotee. A yogi is advised to meditate upon the forms that are approved by devotees. A yogi cannot imagine a form for meditation. Those so-called yogis who manufacture a circle or target are engaged in nonsense. Actually, A yogi must meditate upon the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that has been experienced by the Lord's pure devotees. Yogi means devotee. Yogis who are not actually pure devotees should follow in the footsteps of devotees. It is especially mentioned here that the yogi should meditate upon the form which is thus approved. He cannot manufacture a form of the Lord. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurn Militam Jina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Paran Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Brindavaneshari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kolpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Bhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adigaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Mobile check, please. Mobiles to silent mode. Brijyanu kampita dhyeha grihita murte sanchintayet bhagavato varanaravindam yad vispuran makara kundala volgitena vidyotitamala kapola mudaranasam. Now we've reached the lotus face of the Personality of Godhead. Lord Kapildev has been describing meditation on the Lord, beginning from the lotus feet of the Lord and gradually progressing higher and higher. And now we've reached the Lord's lotus face. Similarly, one has to study Srimad Bhagavatam in the same way. The first and second cantos represent the lotus feet of the Lord, and gradually one progresses through the various cantos until one comes to the tenth canto, which represents the Lord's lotus face. So gradually we have to go, not abruptly. Brijyanu kampita dhiya means that the Lord is merciful to his devotees. This is the nature of the Lord. He's always kind. Pritya. He's equal to everyone. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name tve shosti na priyaha. Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya maite te shuchapyam. Krishna is equal to everyone, but he's more equal to his devotees. He's more inclined to his devotees because his devotees are inclined to him. Yayata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyam. Krishna reciprocates with every living being according to those the way they approach him. So the demons who approach him as enemies are blessed by the Lord by being killed. Vinashaya cha duskrita. And the devotees are blessed with his conch shell and lotus flower, while the mace, which we heard about in the previous verse, and the chakra are bestowed upon the demons. So Brityanu Kampita, he's very much kind to his devotees. Iha means in this material world. The devotees in the material world are in need of kindness. Or the Lord is kind even to the devotees in the material world. It's not that he's kind only to the Nanda Yashoda and the Brajbasis or the Vaikunthabasis. He's kind to his devotees wherever they may be, even in this material world. And Grihita Murte. Grihita Murte, the Lord appears in different forms for the satisfaction of the devotees. Prabhupada mentions that Krishna comes as Lord Nrisimhadev not so much to kill Hiranyakashipu as to satisfy Prahlad Maharaj. Hiranyakashipu could have been killed some other way. Material nature could have done the job. But specifically to bless Prahlad Maharaj. So then when he comes and blesses the devotees who are so keen to see him, he also kills the demons while he's at it. Or he kills the demons to please his devotees. Injari vyakulam lokam mridyanti yuge yuge. He comes to kill the enemies of Indra. That means he's more interested in helping Indra than in getting rid of the demons. Because Indra is a devotee, a Krishna appears to satisfy him, or to satisfy Brahma, or to satisfy other pure devotees. And in the course of that, he kills the demons, because even a saintly person is pleased when a snake or a scorpion is killed. So these demons are like snakes or scorpions, and Krishna kills them. Vinashaya Chaduskritam. The devotees meditate on the Lord in the form that they prefer. And Krishna, Bhavagrahi Janardana, he knows the heart of a particular devotee. And so he reciprocates. He appears as Lord Ramchandra, or he appears as Lord Nrisimhadev, or he appears as Krishna, or he appears as Narayan, according to the desire of the devotee. Ye yatamam prapajyante tamstatayava bhajamyam. And Grihita Murte, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes that the form is the form in which Krishna appears is the, or in which he, upon which he should be contemplated, is the approved form, not some concocted form. Grihita Murte. Grihita means accepted or received. It's not that we can simply think, well, I would like to see Krishna as a something or other. I would like to see God as a whatever. And then that also becomes a form of God. Well, I envision God as a bullseye. I envision God as a candle flame. I envision God as a what have you. It's not that some concocted form of the Lord should be contemplated, but Grihita Murte. Grihita means accepted. Evam parampara praptam. What the previous acharyas have accepted, we accept. Mahajanayena katha sapanta. We have to follow in their footsteps to understand the form of the Lord and not invent something new. It's a very important understanding that one of the ways by which we understand the personality of Godhead is tradition. Tradition doesn't mean just a batch of superstitions gathered over the centuries, but it means the pathway which has been chalked out by the previous authorities. Mahajanayena katha sapanta. So our principle is whatever they accept, we accept. whatever they accept. And whatever they don't accept, we reject. Rupanuga virudhapa siddhanta dvantaharane. About Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it said, he doesn't accept any conclusion which is rupanuga virudha, which is against the conclusions of Srila Rupa Goswami and his followers. If it's against, because Rupa Goswami is our standard authority, appointed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, authorized by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anything that's against his conclusion is rejected. And whatever he accepts is accepted. That makes life easy. We don't have to concoct. We don't have to manufacture. These days it's become fashionable to invent or concoct some ideas about Krishna consciousness and then to devise a complicated logical structure or to pull hits out of the folio Veda base, two words here, four words there, a sentence here, half a paragraph there, to try to demonstrate that one's conclusion is, one's concoction is right. Even though it contradicts everything that Srila Prabhupada ever taught, even though it's unprecedented in history, even though the acharyas never mentioned such a thing, suddenly it becomes the conclusion that Prabhupada wanted us to accept. This is not in line with the standard method of Krishna consciousness. Or sometimes the argument is pulled up, can you show me any place where Srila Prabhupada says that XYZ is not authorized? Oh, you can't. And how can you reject it? This is standard grade B crummy logic. The burden of proof is on the person who wants to establish something new and unusual and unprecedented and unheard of. If I want to establish that the moon is made of green cheese, it's not that I can't. Can you show me any quote from any astronomer that the moon is not made of green cheese? Can you? Is there anything at all in the astronomy book that contradicts this assertion? That specifically says that this assertion is not true? You don't have it, do you? Then it must be. This is all bogus. By that kind of logic, you could establish that there's a 100,000-pound boulder on the dark side of the moon. Because there's no evidence to the contrary. And you could also equally establish, by the same logic, that there are no boulders on the dark side of the moon. Oh, bad logic. Therefore, our method is not logic. Our method is hearing from the authorities. There's also good logic. And we appreciate good logic. But even then, our method is not to understand the absolute truth by good logic. Our method is to understand by hearing from the authorities. And logic may sometimes be offered. Just as Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he says that just as the dehinasmin yata dehe komaram jovanam jara tata dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuyati, as the soul travels from childhood to youth to old age, similarly at death the soul travels to a new body. So this is a kind of logic by analogy. But actually, it's sufficient. Krishna says that the soul travels from one body to the next. We accept it. That's all. When the authority speaks, he doesn't have to give logic. It's enough that he's the authority. And for us to get knowledge, we don't require knowledge, logic. We simply have to accept what the authority says. But since we are fond of logic, since we have a high regard for logic, then the acharyas also offer logic, very good logic, excellent logic. Jiva Goswami has given his Sandarbhas so much evidence, so many good arguments for the Vaishnava Siddhanta. So we're not lacking in logic or arguments, but our real method is not to understand by logic, but by hearing. Similarly, we understand the form of the personality of Godhead, not by logic, because he's achintya. Achintya rupam. He's inconceivable. He's abhanmanasa gochara. He's beyond the realm of logic and speculation. Beyond the realm of the mind. The mind is material. So how will matter extend itself into the transcendental realm of the absolute? Matter has no such capability. So our only way of realization of the absolute truth is by hearing, by receiving this knowledge from the self-realized authorities. Speculation will not help us. By speculation, I think this, I think this, I think this, I think this, maybe this, maybe that. It will take us millions of lifetimes to understand what is what by speculation. And at the end, if one actually comes to the right conclusion, one will understand Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then one will surrender to Krishna. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavan mam prapadyute. Vasudeva sarvamiti. Samahatma sudurlabha. So an intelligent person, hearing this, he'll think that if after millions of lifetimes of cultivating knowledge, when I finally get knowledge, I'll surrender to Krishna, understanding that Krishna is everything. Well, why not just accept Krishna as everything now and surrender now and save myself so many lifetimes? The work has already been done for us. Why should we have to go through it again? Well, would a square work as a wheel? Would a parallelogram of some sort? Maybe a pentagon or a... The wheel's already effectively been around for a long time. We simply have to accept it. So the form of the personality of Godhead is described here. We don't have to speculate. What is his form like? What might God look like? Just as children, sometimes they speculate. I wonder what God looks like. And then they get their ideas of a gray-bearded man sitting on a big throne with, well, it used to be simple, like marionette stuff and push buttons. Now I guess he's got, what do they call those? Nintendo or something. Game Boy. Anyway, there's no need to speculate. Nor especially is there a need to arrive at some impersonal conclusion. Because there's so many speculations. Someone thinks this, someone thinks this. Over here they think that, in this country they think this, over that way they think that. Thousands of years ago these people used to think that. There's so many options that God must be impersonal, none of the above. He's not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, not that. And then they come to a conclusion of nothing, which is the... which is completely wrong. Just because it's not this and not that, it doesn't mean that they've arrived at a clear understanding. They've arrived at an advanced state of ignorance. we don't know. And they've turned that ignorance into, since we don't know that about this, 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 he must not have. And that becomes their positive truth. God has no form, he has no qualities, he has no name, he has no this. Because we've rejected all these, this, that, the other thing. So, here we get the positive description of the personality of Godhead from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Amalam Puranam, spotless Vedic literature. And we simply have to appreciate the Lord's qualities are all attractive and all blissful. His form is the absolute knowledge, is the form of absolute knowledge. So simply by studying the form of the personality of Godhead, starting from his lotus feet, coming to his knees, coming to his waist, coming to his chest, coming to his face, one is studying all knowledge. Prabhupada mentions someplace that the pujaris who are worshipping the deities are studying all the Vedic literature just by worshipping the deity. Because the deity himself is not different from the sum total of Vedic knowledge. So anyone who's serving the deity in the temple is studying all the shastras. Now, it doesn't mean the pujaris shouldn't read the books. The books will help us to realize that the person that we're serving, the deity that we're serving, is not simply some speculative form or some man-made form. But here's Krishna. So his beauty is described, Vadanada Vinda, his lotus-like face, and his earrings, which are shaped like sharks. Why sharks? Why not something else? Because Krishna's explicit. Krishna's particular. Krishna's not maybe this, maybe that, or vague everything. He likes it, that's all. They'd ask Prabhupada, why does Krishna wear a peacock feather? He likes it, that's all. It's his artistic sense. He likes peacock feathers. He thinks a peacock feather is a good thing to wear on your head. So he wears one. And little mercy for the peacocks also. Similarly, why sharks? He likes it, that's all. Shark-shaped earrings, alligator-shaped, rather. Makara. Makara is a kind of a creature, a special creature known to the Vedic sages. Not exactly a shark, not exactly an alligator. But Krishna's earrings are like that. And his cheeks are illuminated by the glitter from those earrings. Just like if a girl is wearing nice, her face is very beautiful, and she's wearing bright, shiny earrings, and the earrings are attracted on her glowing face, then she looks very beautiful. It looks very beautiful. But this beauty is only a small reflection of how beautiful Krishna is. The beauty in the material world is something like paint. Prabhupada mentioned that you have a mannequin, or they make those dolls in India for making deities and so on. And the dolls are made out of straw. And then they put some mud over the straw and you get the form. And it doesn't look like much, but when you paint it, it really looks beautiful. Or in the shop window, the mannequins look really good. Because they're painted. So that little thin covering of paint makes for a beautiful appearance. In the material world also, the beautiful men and women have their beauty by virtue of sometimes, first of all, paint that's purchased in the drugstore. And once you get below that, then there's a thin layer of skin, which sometimes, especially when you're young, looks kind of nice. But if you were to go just one layer down after below that, oh my God, there's all this horrible stuff underneath, which we won't go into a vivid description of right now. But we'll let your imagination run away with all the wonderful constituents to be discovered beneath the skin, as in surgery and so on. And even apart from that, if we restrain our imaginations or don't fixate on these rather unpleasant features below the skin, still even the skin itself gets old and doesn't look quite the same at all. And then finally it becomes ashes or earth or vulture stool, depending on one's cultural practices. At the time of death, it's thrown to the vultures, or it's thrown into the fire, or it's buried in the ground. So what we're attracted to here in the material world is a reflection of real beauty, because real beauty is permanent. Real beauty, false beauty, starts out looking real good, maybe, or by mental concoction, we think it's real good. Mental concoction means that the pig finds his consort to be very beautiful. The dog finds his consort to be very beautiful. And the human beings in various strata all think that my wife or my girlfriend or my husband or whatever is very good looking. But those from another strata don't share that opinion. On Indraloka, they don't come down to earth looking for the most beautiful women. That when they see what we consider to be the beauty stars of this world, they so it's so-called beauty, or it's mentally conceived. And even if we think that anyway, mental or whatever, it's pretty good, it disappears. That beauty disappears. And sometimes it's replaced by horror shows. So I saw some picture in a magazine some time ago of one woman who was a big movie star and a real sex pot, actually, back in the 50s and 60s. And, oh my God, she's frightening looking. Frightening looking person, you know, in her whatever age she is. Like, you'd really run away if you saw this person in the street. So that's the nature of the material world. So all of this beauty of the material world is the reflection of the real beauty. In the spiritual world, Krishna's beauty surpasses all the beauty, even beauty of the heavenly planets. The demigods are amazingly beautiful. And the beauty of the demigods is nothing compared to the beauty of Krishna. Kandarpa koti kamaniya vishesha shobham. Cupid is supposed to be very beautiful, or he gets people intoxicated with beauty. But Krishna, the demigod, that demigod himself, Cupid, or millions of such Cupids, would be attracted by the beauty of Krishna. He's beautiful, and in the material world, someone we wear ornaments and so on, and that makes us look a little good. We decorate ourselves with this and that. But in the spiritual world, the ornaments look good on account of being placed on the body of Krishna. Just the opposite. Here we look good by virtue of the ornaments. There the ornaments look good by virtue of being associated with Krishna. And we also look good when associated with Krishna. In the material world, whatever we think of ourselves, we're actually looking quite bad. Physically, we're, by demigod standards, what to speak of, by Kunta standards, we're pretty bad-looking people. And our minds, if they were exposed to view, would be so embarrassingly bad. And our activities are also embarrassingly bad. Even if we think that we're good, if we took the sum total of our great activities and added them up, it's really quite pathetic. So we're looking bad because we've turned away from Krishna. Prabhupada gave the example of the leaf separated from the tree. When the tree leaf is on the tree, it looks quite good, green and very nice to see. But when the leaves fall from the tree, then they dry up, they turn brown, and they get loaded in big bushels and thrown in the garbage truck. So Krishna is beautiful, and the original nature of the living being is also beautiful. So we should associate ourselves with Krishna so that our actual beauty, our actual knowledge, our actual strength, our actual, all of these opulences, wealth, will be realized on the real platform. Krishna is the reservoir of all opulences, and the living beings share these opulences to a small extent compared to Krishna, because Krishna is unlimited. The living entity is minute. But to the full extent that his minuteness accommodates, he can be filled with all glorious qualities when he's associated with Krishna. Then it's described that Krishna becomes like a gem, and the devotees become like a golden setting for that gem. So together, their appearance is very beautiful. So we should make it our business to be always associated with Krishna by meditating on Krishna. And that meditation, especially in this age, is by chanting the holy name of the Lord. And that will make our life successful. Hare Krishna. Are there some questions? Javita Prabhu.
You mentioned in the prologue here how one should not concoct a form of God and worship that, and you explained that. But isn't it true that in this world people are concocting all kinds of things and worshiping them, whether they're authorized forms of the demigods or just something out of their own brain? Is that what Krishna is mentioning in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Yo-yo-yam-yam?
Tanam bhakta shradhi archita michchati tasya tasya. It can be accepted that way. Anyone who has some faith. Krishna says someone wants to worship a demigod, I make his faith in that demigod strong so that he can do it. And that's how the Krishna worshippers are getting their strength from Krishna. Krishna is inspiring them from within the heart to worship him. The demigods can't quite do that because they're not there with the same capabilities. But when Krishna sees, all right, this person wants to worship Durga or Shiva or Brahma or whatever, then from within the heart, Krishna says, all right, I'll give you you don't want to worship me? I'm not going to make a thing of it. You go ahead and worship such and such. And Krishna makes his faith steady. Similarly, if someone wants to worship you know, such and such rock star, such and such politician, such and such whatever. Or he wants to be a nature worshiper, or dedicate his life to dolphins, or and Krishna helps him.
Hi, it is my understanding that we're supposed to take into heart the everything that is written in the Gita, plus also practice it.
Yes.
A true, genuine devotee is, to my understanding, the devotee does not choose Krishna, but Krishna chooses that devotee. And my understanding is that Krishna really does everything for us. As you said, that the devotee chooses Krishna. I think a true, genuine devotee is chosen by Krishna. That is my understanding of it.
Well,
what are your feelings?
A true devotee is chosen by Krishna rather than the devotee choosing Krishna. Well, everything is dependent on, it's mutual. Krishna can choose you and you can say, well, forget it. I'm not interested. Krishna chooses and the devotee reciprocates. Or the devotee seeks Krishna, just like Dhruva Maharaj. He was seeking. Where is God? He was seeking. So, seeing this boy is so serious, Krishna reciprocated. Yayatam mam prapadyante, tam stataiva vajami. Krishna says, as one surrenders to me, I reciprocate with him. Everything depends finally on Krishna. I can't even seek Krishna without Krishna's help. That's a fact. But it's a relationship. It's not that we can just kind of bomb around the material world, carrying on with our business, completely forgetful of Krishna. And if anyone says, well, you know, you should surrender to Krishna, when Krishna desires. Lots of times we hear this from people. We suggest that, why don't you engage in devotional service? Yes, I'm going to dedicate myself. I should dedicate myself to him. And as soon as he desires, it's all up to him. And they're confident that he's not going to do anything. But Krishna has already told them, Sarva dharman pratyaja mamekam sharanam. Give up everything and surrender to me. He doesn't say, wait till I come and then we'll talk about it. You see? Prithu Prabhu.
This one hears quite often, Krishna chooses his devotee. Not within our society, but outside. Mm-hmm. You go to India, if you go to... But Krishna is very clear, actually. He says, Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshtyo. I'm not partial, I'm equal to all. And whoever renders service to me, he's my friend. He's in me, and I'm in him. So the onus is really on us, very clearly. Sarva dhamman, give up all. Or, yeyatamam prapadyate, according you surrender unto me, I come towards you. So the onus is really on us. That's our freedom. Otherwise, if Krishna would sit up there and he makes a choice, I pick this, that, that would, first of all, it would be unfair. It would compromise him being equal to all. And also it would compromise our personal freedom. Maybe I don't want to be chosen. Maybe I want to do my own thing. So really the onus is totally on... This idea is not a good idea at all. It is really, from all we have heard from the acharyas, it is really... The onus is on the living entity to turn to Krishna, and then Krishna will help. It is... there is a cooperation going on. But without myself walking towards Krishna, nothing is going to happen. Harbo.
Mm-hmm. Could I add just one little thing?
Sure.
You mentioned Dhruva. The way that Krishna chooses us, especially, is by sending his representative. He takes a proactive, even though we're just bombing around in the material world, he sends Prabhupada or many other representatives to agitate us, to canvass. And if we still want to reject, then we're condemned.
Judah Karma Prabhu?
On this point that you raised towards the beginning about people trying to introduce unprecedented doctrines or practices, and you know, arguing that there's no prohibition. But what if such persons give an example? Well, Srila Prabhupada, say, for example, in participating in the marriages of his disciples, did something unprecedented, and he himself said it. No sannyasi had ever done that. So doesn't that give a license for current authorities to do unprecedented things?
There's some... Yeah, first you become Srila Prabhupada, and then you do the unprecedented things. You know, the superpowers, those who are super powerful, can do things that the ordinary person can't do. The king has privileges that the ordinary citizen doesn't have. So if we want to presume to have the same capabilities, we'll get in trouble. Another thing is that when Srila Prabhupada would do unprecedented things, he would let us know that it was an unprecedented thing. And he would give the reason why he was doing such unprecedented things. In this case, he was coming to the West. There was no Vedic culture. Nobody knew anything. So in order to establish Vedic marriage, Prabhupada himself, who else was there to do it? Just like Krishna. He initiated Brahma. There's nobody else to do it. So sometimes something unprecedented is done by the authority, and then he'll say that this is unprecedented, but we're doing it. Actually, he'll even cite precedent that we have to do this to establish the standard thing. So that's different from inventing some entirely new thing, entirely against the previous conclusions, by an unqualified person. Sure, it's an argument. Well, Prabhupada did new things. I can do new things. But that argument can very quickly lead to every kind of nonsense. We should be careful. The better argument is, well, Prabhupada did this, so I'm going to do this. You know, being Western upstarts, we're very eager to see what we can do different. You know, Prabhupada did different, innovative things. What can I do that will be different? You know, can I do it 90% different? Maybe 95. Can I push it? Can I go 97% different? But how about let's do your scorecard by how many things you can do the same way, how much you can follow the standard, rather than inventing a new one. Now, that said, there's some room for innovation. Prabhupada said you should use your Western intelligence for things like distributing books, preaching. It doesn't mean that everything has to be, well, whatever we did in 1968, that's the standard. And if we didn't do it in 1968, we're never going to do it. It's not meant to be a new system of refrigeration. But one has to understand things with the intelligence by following the regulative principles and following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And the current also, yeah. We have guru, we have shastra, we have sadhus also. Woo, all the sadhus think I'm out to lunch. Maybe I should think about that. Prithu Prabhu.
The mentality to imitate while having no qualifications. There was a German philosopher in the last century, Liechtenstein, and he said, once a great man leaves, somebody wants to wear the hat as he did. Somebody wants to wear the sword as he did. But the great man he was, no one wants to be. That explains it.
Your microphone is coming your way.
Well, just about the same point, I was wondering if your comments were of a prophylactic nature Or do we have this problem in the movement now that devotees are trying to establish unprecedented doctrine?
No, that wouldn't happen. Not here.
Say that again?
No, that wouldn't happen. That wouldn't happen to us. No, 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 no. Out of the question. Perish the thought. No one would concoct anything.
Huh? Is it a current problem? Or?
Well, shucks. It's not. It's a problem for those who are doing it, yes. And it's a problem for those who are bewildered by those who are doing it, yes. It is something of a problem. Yes, in the back there.
I'm very new to this temple over here. I want to thank Srivas and all the devotees here. They make me feel very welcome. It is my understanding, so far as that I've heard, that every holy book that I've read from the temple that I bought and also given to me, I've taken into heart, and out of love, discipline, and pure eagerness to learn everything and do the right thing, I feel very welcomed over here. And my understanding of what is being shared or what is being laid on me is I'm just a simple, humble servant of Krishna. And I'd like to thank everybody, all the devotees who share all the good things with me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Tell me what to do.
I'm going to give this
stop. Okay, by the order of higher authorities, we're stopping here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, Maji. How are you? Nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.